everyone. This is Ange Cole, episode number 12. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I appreciate everyone who's been showing love. I am so happy today because I have a very, very special guest, and his name is Josh. Josh, what's going on?
What's good, fam?
What's going on?
Good to see you,
it's
bro.
Good to see you.
It's really good to see you.
We both went to UMass together. He is right now, you're doing a grad program out here.
Yes.
I drove out here just to interview Josh. Literally drove 2 hours this morning just to come here. And I'm really happy to be here, and I'm happy that you're here, too.
So, I'm happy to be here, too. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, no problem. And if you guys at any point want to tweet Josh or tweet me or on Instagram or anything like that, just use the hashtag AngeCode. If you tweet about the episode today, if you want to agree, disagree, or pop off on something, just use the hashtag AngeCode on Twitter or Instagram. And yeah, I want to hear what y'all have to say about the things that we're going to talk about today. And shout out to WMUA at UMass because they're letting me use it for the free. But you can hear everything, like, you hear the chair?
Yeah.
Everything. Mm-hmm. We had a little bit of a struggle starting today. But Josh, why don't you introduce yourself? You're part of Free Negro University.
Of course. Thank you. Again, thank you all so much for having me. Again, my name is Josh. I'm the founder and dean of Free Negro University. Free Negro University, a.k.a. the Anti-Hotep Factory. So what that means is, you know, racist, misogynist, hoteps, you can get this work equal opportunity. You know what I'm saying? I don't discriminate. So I'm just really glad to chop it up with you. I'm glad to chop it up with what I'm doing, chop it up with what you're doing, and talk about some real stuff.
I'm ready. And where can people follow you, Josh?
Oh, absolutely. If you want to follow on Instagram, it's at Free Negro University. On Twitter, it's just Free Negro U. Facebook, Free Negro University.
But, and I know you also have t-shirts. I know that, like, on your Instagram, you're out here selling t-shirts, selling a lot of clothes. Like, tell me more about that. How did it start? What's going on?
So we start, so actually, next month would be 1 year since I started selling t-shirts. There's a Free Negro shirt that's selling a lot, the Fuck Trump shirt that's really selling a lot, as it should be, and as, you know, we're going to talk about that in a second.
Fuck Trump.
Yep. we have the whiteness is exhausting for those days where, you know, you just can't deal with white folks. We have a couple new things. I'm just keeping it 100%. Like, look, you know how I ride.
I fuck with it.
We went to school together. You know,
yeah,
you know,
yep, 100%.
You know what I mean? So, some days you can't deal with it. And, you know, you need to let folks know what's going on. Like, today ain't really the day. I mean, no day is the day, but today really isn't the day.
Don't fuck with me.
I'm saying, you know. So we have a couple new designs rocking, dropping in a couple of weeks. We have Black Athletes of Black Lives.
Wow, I like that.
Thank you. That was something designed specifically for a friend. He does a lot of work organizing athletes and making sure that their politics are right, and
right,
their understanding of, like, their position as, you know, Black athletes and really Black workers. So we have that dropping soon. We have a whole bunch of other Free Negro campus apparel dropping soon as well.
Okay. And where can people buy this?
So right now everything is on the Teespring account, and that is through, you can find that through either the, well, you can find it through all the social media platforms. The link is up there on all of them. And that's where we're at right now.
Okay, but I'm excited to see these new articles of clothing.
Thank God.
Yes. And so you started it last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what made you want to start it?
Mm-hmm. So in order to understand, like, how I started, I really need to take a second to speak about the summers leading up to my senior year. I was a part of a fellowship called the Institute for Responsible Citizenship. It's a 2-year summer intensive designed for young Black collegiate men.
Okay.
And I spent the summer after my sophomore and junior years in D.C. working in various think tanks. A lot of our friends were working in the White House. We were working in, like, really high profile organizations throughout D.C. and Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
But the real thing that really had me coming back was the conversation that we had. I can honestly say it was the most progressive space of Black men that I've ever been in my life. And that is something that I wanted to recreate, at least partially, when I got back to UMass, and I don't have that space all the time, to where we can have conversations about racism, misogyny, like our responsibility as Black men to Black women,
mm-hmm.
and how do we be better. and also making it accessible and also looking good while doing it.
Right, right. And then, so what made you want it to be Free Negro University? Mm-hmm. Like, how did that idea come about?
Again, attributing it back to the Institute. Mm-hmm. There was one day where we went to sort of Black Joy Festival. It was hosted by the DC chapters of the Black Youth Project and okay. Black Lives Matter. And it was held in Malcolm X Park. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this was very soon after the Charleston shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember everyone was just on edge, rightfully so. And I went to this this festival with mm-hmm. my boys, and there was I can't really describe it because, you know, it's kind of get emotional describing it, but there was this drum circle, there was, you know, little Black girls playing double dutch, you know, they were playing hopscotch, like all ages playing hopscotch, you know, old folks dancing. Mm. And I'm like, damn, like, this is how it probably feel when we get free. You know?
Mm.
And
this was at the Black Joy Festival?
Yes, it was at the Black Joy Festival.
Okay.
And I don't know where it came from. I still don't really know. But, you know, me and my boys, Justin, Ozzie, and Horace, we took a picture. I just captioned it, like, Free Negro University Class of 2099.
I
don't know where it came from. And that's the story, and I'm sticking to it because that's the most authentic thing I can say about its inception.
Yeah, I fuck with it. Wow. Nice. And so, okay, you are a Black-owned business,
mm-hmm.
and you run this by yourself, right?
Yes.
Okay. If you had to pick three Black-owned businesses to put out there right now, to be like, yo, y'all gotta to, like, check this out. What are your top three? Or, like, in no order, no specific order.
I would say Studio E Designs, that is ran by another Black graduate student here at UMass.
Okay.
She sells backpacks, hand-painted backpacks. They're so dope. They're so awesome. So check that out. Studio E Design, saw one. They're on Instagram.
Okay.
Shout out to Erica. This Black by Popular Demand, those shirts.
Oh, those are dope.
Those are so
dope. Yeah.
Shirts. And the Black Joy Mixtape. I don't know if you ever tuned into their podcast, but they're awesome. I know they're not technically a business, but it's still a collective of Black folks doing their thing. And they're just, you know, speaking real shit. And also the Extraordinary Negroes.
Awesome. All right, make sure y'all check them out. I'm going to check them out after this episode because I'm feeling the vibe. I'm feeling the energy. And you said that the backpacks are here at UMass?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, now y'all know, UMass students. So now you're on Twitter, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So Josh needs more followers on Twitter.
I don't Twitter. Sorry.
So all my Twitter peeps, where, like, honestly, some of my biggest supporters are on Twitter.
Mm.
And I was telling Josh, I'm like, yo, you gotta hop on this Twitter swag. Like, I'm telling you, so many people, especially Black Twitter, will fuck with your shit. Like, heavy. So definitely show him some love. One more time for the fans. What's your handle on Twitter?
Just at Free Negro U.
All right. So we're gonna get started. I got some shit to say, and it's been on my chest, and I briefly told Josh earlier, but I'm going to get into the nitty-gritty details. So in this episode, we're going to talk about some really sensitive topics, and, you know, Josh is going to shed some light and shed his opinion. And on the way here, it was just so ironic that I got pulled over not once but two times by the police. And so the first time, I'm sitting in my car, I'm not speeding, I'm like, and it's, mind you, right now it's 10:40 in the morning, and when I was driving, it was like 8:30, and I'm not texting nobody at that time, and everybody, you know, everybody will take out their phone, respond to a text real quick while they drive in, put it away. I'm not, like, out here saying, oh, everybody do that, you know, but people do it. And I'm on my phone changing my GPS location because I had it to, like, UMass Amherst and I wanted to put it to the campus center, whatever. But I'm on my GPS and my little thing, the holder, broke where I put the map on the thing.
Mm.
So I have my phone in my hand looking at this map, and I'm not texting nobody.
Mm.
And then he pulls me over and he's like, you were on your phone. I'm like, honestly, I show him my phone. I'm like, look, I wasn't texting nobody. I was on my Google Maps. Like, I'm trying to figure out where I'm going. I'm sorry. And when he got out of the car, I noticed he was black. Mm. And I felt a sense of relief in a way, you know, like I was like, oh my God. And he's like, yeah, you shouldn't be on your phone, blah, blah. I'm like, I totally understand. My bad. I even showed him the broken holder, the thing that's on the, that you put the phone on. Mm. And he goes back to the whip, comes back, and he gives me a $105 ticket. $105. I looked at him, and then he, like, ran away. I was like, excuse me. And he was just dipped. He just dipped. He was like, look at the back if you have any questions, blah, blah, blah. Like, to appeal it, basically. This is what it says. You know what? I brought it because... It says, oh no, this is the second ticket. Let me pull out the first ticket because there's two of these bitches. It says, reading electronic message on cell phone. I'm like, bitch, I just fucking told you that I'm not reading no goddamn electronic message. I'm on my GPS, and I even showed you I was on my GPS. And I would have, you know what, I wouldn't have been that mad if I really was. You know what I'm saying?
No.
But it's 8:30 in the morning. Who the fuck am I texting at 8:30 in the morning?
Right.
I was so tight, Josh. I was tight. And then he ran away. So I'm like, okay, bet. Say no more. That's the first ticket. $105. I'm like, I'm going to appeal this shit. It wasn't an electronic message. No.
Absolutely.
You got me fucked up.
Absolutely.
And I wasn't doing anything wrong. He probably won't even show up at the court. Mm-hmm. Then the second one, when I drive away, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put my shit on cruise control because I'm not trying to speed. I know he's probably going to stop up there and he's probably going to try to catch motherfuckers.
Yeah.
So I put my shit on cruise control, 75 miles per hour in a 65. People can drive like 10 miles per hour over it.
Right.
But if you're like 80, then you can't be doing that,
absolutely,
right? So I'm here and I'm like going 74. I remember I put the thing on 74. I'm like, okay, I'm good. 9 miles over, we good.
Right.
People passing me, like I'm in the slow lane. Yeah. People are passing me OD fast. Then I didn't see the cop. And the same motherfucker pulls me over. And then he comes up to me. He's like, so now you were going 80 in a 65. And I look at him, I'm like, I had my cruise control on, I was going 74. And he was like, so you were going over the speed limit on purpose. I'm like, okay, you need my license and registration. Here you go. And then this ticket is for $150. And he says 80 miles per hour. He didn't have no fucking gun. He didn't have none of that shit.
Right. I'm fucking no.
Josh.
I'm sorry.
And it really made me sick. That I was texting Josh. I'm like, yo, Josh, it got me fucking sick. The fact, like, I don't know why, but the fact that he's black, for some reason, like, it makes me more upset. I don't know. I don't know if maybe because I feel like, I don't know. I felt a sense of relief when he got out the car the first time.
Right.
I don't know. It just has me sick, dude.
But it makes me sick because, like, and I'll speak to this more later because I know it's one of the questions, but it's like, I know you as a black person, you're not in your uniform all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're out of your uniform, you get fucked with by white cops too, and other cops as well. So for you to do this and then be so cavalier about it shows that, yo, like, black people can be complicit in the state, fuck shit too.
I was tight. And it also made me really upset that his attitude behind all of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. It was, and it's just so ironic that, like, we're going to be talking about police brutality and, like, I'm on my way to do this specific podcast. And, like, you pull me over. I'm like, okay. Oh, you are, yes, thank God.
Right.
But then you over here fucking me over, like, OD.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my record is clean. I've never gotten a speeding ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I don't got no points on my license. My shit is clean. Like, I'm just at a loss for words. So those are my two tickets, and I'm going to appeal them. And I'm not paying no fucking $200 for some bullshit.
Right.
But
I'm glad that you made it. I'm glad that you're here.
I'm glad, too. And I'm glad that I texted Josh right after it happened. I'm like, yo, I'm sick. I don't know what to do. But, okay. So I need to get that off my chest. But were you looking at the news this week? Did you see Trump pop off? So for those of you who don't know, Trump was making, he was like on the podium basically, right?
Yep.
Making some type of speech or
in Alabama.
Oh, yes. And he basically referred to Colin Kaepernick as a son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
He said the words, son of a bitch.
Right.
He said, son of a bitch. I don't think I've ever heard a president since I've been alive, like on a podium saying son of a bitch.
Nope.
And he was referring to somebody who is black. And but then when it comes to talking about Nazis or white supremacy, you're over here basically making it seem like it's okay.
Yep.
So I'm going to need you to speak a little bit on that. What did you think when you saw that video? What was the first thing that, like, when you saw that video of Trump talking that bullshit, what did you think?
So there's so many things, right? So, first of all, like, I've never heard a president, like, use such language before. But, again, I'm not surprised. Also, I've never seen a president do so many rallies while in office. Like, you won. You have a job to do. Like, why are you still acting as if it's 2016? Like, this is not the campaign season.
Right.
You have a job to do. You have crises to handle. But, you know, that's giving him too much credit.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, like, take myself back. And the thing that really messes with me is that, like, this is the third black civilian that he's attacked in the past 2 weeks.
Oh, very true.
Like, it was mm-hmm. Kaepernick. Like, we knew where his stance was on Kaepernick for a couple of months now.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was
the Fox reporter.
Yep, Jemele Hill.
Yep.
And Steph Curry, well, yesterday, saying, oh, your invitation to the White House is withdrawn. Like, nigga, he wasn't.
Shut up. Wait. I didn't know this.
Yeah, he was on Twitter, and I guess he was saying, well, because Steph Curry is hesitating, the invitation to the White House is withdrawn. And I'm like, motherfucker, he, like.
I'm dead ass. Sick.
You know what I'm saying? But first and foremost, Steph Curry told you, like, the Warriors told y'all he wasn't coming right after they won the championship. So you saying, like, yo, oh, you died about, motherfucker, I wasn't coming. The fuck is wrong with you?
I can't. I'm so sad.
So I don't, again, I'm not surprised. I think my grandma always told me, when somebody tells you who they are the first time, believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not anything that is foreign to the way Trump chooses to govern and the type of democracy that Trump chooses to engage in. Well, one thing I will say, and we can then move to other points, is that I was listening to Fox News and Mark Hill was on there, and like this whole idea of like this plantation mindset,
mm-hmm.
where he feels that, well, Trump believes that if these players do certain things that they have a right to be fired. And to say this often then, to say this says like, oh, well, these owners not only own the team, they own these players, they own these black bodies. Like, no.
Mm-hmm. And what they do, what right. they believe in, what exactly. they stand for, their voice.
Exactly. Like that, those two are,
it's fucked.
You know what I mean? Those two are not synonymous. Like, you own the team, and I right. happen to be on this team,
but you don't own me as a person.
Right. So, yeah, I don't. This is ridiculous.
Josh, when I tell you, I saw that shit and I'm like, I'm appalled at the fact that you're using profanity on that podium
mm-hmm.
that has like the United States of America fucking logo, eagle, whatever mm-hmm. on it.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, so first you're swearing. And second, you're coming at somebody who's black in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of me is like, you doing this because you low-key, like, he is doing all these rallies. You know how you mentioned that, why are you still doing rallies while you're president? You have a job to do. I really think that he's just planting the seed so that he can get reelected.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. He's planting this little seed so that he could come back and just fuck our whole shit up.
Yeah.
And one thing that I was reading that actually made me a little bit proud was the fact that, you know, I'm Dominican, and mm-hmm. I fuck with baseball all day. What's good, mm-hmm. Dominican Twitter? Let's
Thanks,
go. And I was reading that a Major League Baseball player took a knee yesterday.
Yeah,
I see that.
Yep.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it just made me feel like, okay, there's some solidarity here. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to turn on the NFL. I haven't turned it on this whole season mm-hmm. because of it. And I used to go to parties, you know what I mean? Like, watch parties and like, oh, let's all chill and watch football, like, let's watch this game or whatever. And I just really haven't been into it. But I really wanted to tune in and just see, after that whole Trump statement, to see what happened. Did you tune in? Did you see if more people took a knee? Like,
I didn't. I saw some still shots. I know that pretty much all the black players on the Ravens, not, well, I'll just say all, I saw like Terrell Suggs and like, okay. a bunch of like Ravens players. A lot of the Cleveland Browns, they took knees, but they've been doing that since the preseason. So,
yeah,
I just watched the still shots after the game.
Yeah. I'm wondering if, like, because of this, more people are going to take a knee. And I honestly hope so, because they need to know that this shit is wrong.
Absolutely.
This shit is just fucked up.
Absolutely.
Oh, God. So, one question, one of the questions that was submitted,
mm-hmm.
By the way, if you want to submit a question, go on Curious Cat. bit.ly/angecode_. And basically, so you can submit anonymous questions, and it can be to me, it can be to a guest. But one of the questions that was submitted, and that I actually have the same question, is what is a hotep? You said you're an anti-hotep. I didn't want to search it. I wanted to hear your definition. So, what's a hotep?
Absolutely. So, we've all seen hotep, brother, and there are numerous varieties. So, I'll just give you some common things that I've heard from a lot of hotep people that I have had in my life before. So, hoteps say some things that kind of go like this. They will tell you that homosexuality is a European construct designed to effeminize the black man. They will tell you that like black men being effeminate is like against this whole like black alpha male kind of mentality. They'll say things like all of Africa originated from Egypt, and they say these tropes that kind of sound like conspiracy theory in the beginning, but then like you realize that you actually believe this, and like this is something that you actually like base your life around. And they'll say other things like, well, you know, all black women are God, but when you talk about Cardi B or Nicki Minaj or other black women who have, you know, wear wigs or wear weave, oh, nah, she's trying to be white or whatever the case may be. So a hotep is a brother that is pro-black but still guises his pro-blackness in deep misogyny, homophobia, transphobia, and has a very distorted understanding of Africa. And, like, I mean, I think all brothers go through a hotep phase. You know, I'm gonna keep it real. I went through a hotep phase.
Yeah.
But
do you think women go through a hotep phase?
Because
I can see what you're talking about right now. I can see. It makes me think of a couple of people that are women that have had similar points of views. You know what I mean?
So I definitely will say that I don't think that it's exclusive to men. I think a lot of us go through situations where we have, like, we think we have understanding, like, you know, we think we know everything, but like, there's so much more complexities and there's so much more nuance to liberation that we still need to keep learning about. But to me, like, a hotep is some dude that, like, thinks that he knows everything.
Right.
And you can't tell him everything, anything that potentially contradicts his point of view is white conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And what the white man's logic. And like,
you were a hotep before.
I definitely was.
Yeah.
I definitely was.
Oh my God. No, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, I can totally see that. Yeah.
I definitely was.
Yeah, I remember.
I'm not.
I don't think you are anymore though.
Yeah. I'm definitely not hiding it. Like, all brothers go through a hotep phase.
Right.
I think a lot of brothers go through a hotep phase.
That's so interesting.
You know? And it's like, but like the point that is really key is, what are you doing to like continue to, you know, expand like your mindset? Like, what are you doing to like continue to like critique the things that you do? Like, I could easily just stop there and say, like, all right, it's cool, that's it. But there's more complexities, there's more nuance to these things. So, are you going to then commit yourself to learning more and like continuously seek truth?
And having like that growth mindset rather than having like a fixed mindset about like, this is what it is.
Right.
Like, I totally understand. It seems like hoteps, correct me if I'm wrong. So hoteps seem like they have like a fixed mindset.
Yes.
They think they're right. And that's just what it is.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you know. You have a growth mindset and we're not a hotep no more.
Yeah. Oh, God. I think back to those days. Like, damn.
So the next question that was submitted, it says, I know many hotep guys who preach for equality, spirituality, and shit, but have some sexist mindsets. What are some good words of advice to tell hoteps what's good? So I'm gonna rephrase it. So this person knows a lot of hoteps that be preaching. But they have a sexist mindset. So what would you tell somebody that's a hotep that has a sexist mindset? So that does some shit that, and you want to preach some truth to them. What would you tell them?
The only thing I could tell them is you can't be pro-black and misogynistic at the same time. You can't be pro-black and homophobic at the same time. Because what about, you know, are black women not still black? Are black queer folks not black? Are black trans folks not black? Mm. So if we're going to be about, you know, liberation for black lives and all black lives, let's be about it. Right. But if you're here just for, you know, black straight men, then tell me you're about. I would respect you more if you just said, like, you're here for black straight people or black men or black boys. But yeah, like, those two things aren't, those two things are mutually exclusive. Like, you can't.
They are mutually exclusive.
Yeah. Like, they have to, you have to then challenge yourself to then get out of those mindsets, or you're doing this whole thing a disservice.
Yeah. Man, you really preaching. I'm sitting here like, what? I wish people could see my face. I'm like, yeah, man, yeah. Okay. So, wait. So what would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them.
Let's say if, like, I'm a hotel.
Right.
And I'm sitting in front of you and I'm like, yo, I was about to move on to the next question. Mm-hmm. I was so into what you were saying that I'm like, oh, okay, next question. But I didn't even, we didn't answer it. So what would you tell them? I'm a hotel and I just basically said, like, some shit that is really sexist.
Well, brother, so I was in a, yo, fam, like, that's, do you not see that black women are still black? Like, what of them? What of, like I said before, like, what of, like, black folk who are transgender? Like, does their transness negate their blackness somehow? Mm. And I would just really want you to help me understand, because, like, that is very, I mean, it wasn't foreign to me, you know, at some point in time, but, like, that just is, it doesn't make any sense, bro. Like, let's work through this and, like, let's see, like, where the disconnect is happening, because for you to say that this is somehow anti-black is problematic. And not only is it problematic, it's like it does, like, major harm to black women, black queer folks, and black trans folks. So, like, we got to talk about some of this stuff.
Right. Right. Okay. So, I like that. I feel like oftentimes I begin tight. I'm just like, listen, what's good? Nah. But I think it's really important to ask them, like, you know, help me understand. Tell me a little bit more about what you're thinking. Why do you think that? And sometimes people just end up answering their own questions.
Yeah.
And they end up questioning themselves and their thinking and why they're thinking that way. And I like that approach. So the next question, it says, how do you feel about integration? Mm. And then there's like a second question to that. It says, how do you feel about integration? Do you think that as black people, we are better off on our own? Kind of makes me think about Malcolm X a little bit.
Mm. So, when I hear this, I think about my aunt. So, a quick story. I won't
go. You go, you go.
But my aunt, she grew up in Mississippi. She grew up in the height of Jim Crow. She also told me that she had to walk past two white schools to get to her school, which is like a one room schoolhouse, like 50 some odd kids in the room. You know, broken down books, you know, no equipment. But there was a community there. So it was something that she described to her, like, you know, she always told me that white people invented the PTA conference, or white people invented the PTA because, you know, this was, if you have nowhere else to go, if you are then restricted from access to other spaces, like, we have to then make these things for our own.
Right.
And there wasn't any such thing as, like, the PTA conference or a parent-teacher conference. Like, you, like, my great-grandmother saw my grandmother's teacher in church at the market. So, like, if she knew that my grandma was fucking up, my mother knew about it.
Like, oh, facts. Were, yeah. Like, it was more of a community.
Right. And I'm not saying, I don't want to frame it as, like, we've lost that person, because I feel like we definitely have a lot of communities, you know, today in 2017. But that was always something that I spoke about. Or that's something I always thought about when the topic of integration came through. And I'm not arguing that separate is equal. Separate is inherently unequal. But I always thought about, you know, what that then meant for black children who had a community there, who had teachers who were qualified, who knew these students, knew their families, knew where their strong suits were. Like, my grandmother was reading at a higher grade level than she actually was. And, like, my teacher pointed that out to her parents. And there wasn't that same kind of community. Well, she told me there wasn't that same kind of community when her school became interior-oriented, she had to start going to white schools now. Mm-hmm. Not only do they not believe that you can succeed, but you got kids calling you nigga every day. Like, who, mm-hmm. like, what child can thrive in that environment?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you gotta be walked into school by the National Guard and expect to then mm-hmm. perform at the same level as your white counterparts.
Right.
So I always thought about that when thinking about integration and what that then meant for us as, at least in the education standpoint. But I don't know. I think this is like some, I'll preface this by saying that I think there's more questions than there are answers in these situations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not personally against integration. I'm against the racist violence that we receive.
When there's integration.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying that I want, again, I'm not saying that I'm against that. I'm saying that there are ramifications to us entering white spaces that are oftentimes like very violent towards us. However, I will say at the same time that there are major benefits to predominantly or exclusively black spaces, or when black people have the power and the resources to do for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing right now, the most pointed example I can point out right now is Rihanna's Fenty Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, a black woman then has the resources and the power to then design a makeup line for black women, and it's, at least what I've been reading, it's as inclusive as it can possibly be.
Yes. It has the lightest of the light and the darkest of the dark.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that isn't always the case when white people are left to then give black people things or then design things for black people. So there is power and there is a necessity in a forward bias mentality.
Right.
I'm not going to fault somebody if they said that I can't trust that white people have my best interest at heart, so therefore I'm not going to then be in the same spaces. I'm not in all good conscience going to then fault them for that. If there were the resources to do so, and if there wasn't violence attached to black people entering white spaces all the time, then hell yeah. That's fine. But
I'll be with y'all.
Yeah.
I could be in the same space. Yeah.
But until that day comes, like, I'm not going to say like, oh my God, you're wrong. I'm not going to wag the finger at certain black people to say that they can't or they won't entertain the idea of, you know, being in white spaces or sending kids to white schools.
Mm-hmm. I feel you on that. So I went to a predominantly white high school, and it was a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were talking about, you know, people of color entering predominantly white spaces and facing violence and facing, you know, just tension.
Mm.
There was one time, I'm in high school, and I'll never forget it. His name is Bogey. And it was, the whole class was white, and there was one other black student in the classroom. And I was the only Latina there.
Mm.
And it was in our English class, and this dude is next to me, and he's like, you know, it's not like you're really gonna like go home and like do this homework. Like, you might as well do it here. Like, it was like some stupid shit. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, he was just trying to push my buttons. And it was my freshman year, my first year there. I had gone from from a really, really, really diverse school, middle school, to a Catholic high school. And my point was to get kicked out. Like, I didn't want to be there.
Mm.
And it made me think about that when I read that question. I'm like, I really don't want to be in this white space. Mm. It really made me so uncomfortable. And he told me, he's like, well, don't you live with like your abuela and your cousin and your other cousin, and that cousin probably has kids, and your mom and your dad probably isn't even there. Like, just like popped off, just started saying all this wild shit. And I got up and I flipped my desk. I'll never forget it. I got up, I flipped my desk. I'm like, I'm fucking over this white shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out, and I didn't get suspended, and I was really upset. I really thought I was gonna get like expelled, and I was so upset that I didn't. It was like the first or second week of school, and I popped off on them. And it made me, when I read that question, it made me think of that, of like how bad I wanted to just be with my own people, like to be with people that looked like me and that had shared similar experience, and where I didn't have to think about, you know, these people don't understand me, or like these people think that I live a certain lifestyle, or that, you know what I'm saying? And it's just like facing all of that and then having to go through those 4 years in that, it was a harsh experience. And I don't know, a part of me is like, I wonder what it would have been like if I was in a space where it was predominantly people of color rather than people that were white.
Absolutely.
And it also makes me think of school, like UMass. We both went to UMass. It's a PWI. And, like, it makes me think, what if I went somewhere that was way more diverse? Right. What if I went to a school that had people that looked like me? You know what I'm saying? Where I wasn't the person in the room that was representing all Dominicans. Or, like, I wasn't... Some people even, they think that I'm, like, American black. You know what I'm saying? Like, black from here. And I'm like, I'm not... No. Just because I'm a person of color doesn't mean that I can speak for anybody who's a person of color. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or even for Dominicans. I can't even speak for all Dominicans.
Right.
So, I don't know. That question really... It was a little triggering for me. It brought back memories because I hated it.
It is. And I think, well, again, I'll speak for myself. I have definitely entertained the idea of transferring out of UMass, like, multiple times.
Right.
And even now, you know, in graduate school, I still, like, kick myself every semester I start. And I said, like, what if I did my undergrad in HBCU? What if I went to, like, more? I didn't even apply to any HBCUs because I was deterred by my white guidance counselor. Like, well, no, like, you know, and then there's also this idea of, like, you know, this model minority thing that, you know, that happens in these white spaces. Like, well, no, like, you know, Josh, you're special. Like, you need to be in a space.
You'll flourish,
like,
here.
Right. You know,
this is where you're going to flourish.
Exactly. They don't have what you need at Morehouse. Or, like, first, how the fuck do you know what I need? How are you going to tell me that?
Right.
Second of all, like, and I also did a post on this. A lot of schools and a lot of guidance counselors, admissions officers that are white, tell black students not to go to HBCUs, and they have never even set foot on HBCU. And I was like, damn, that is really problematic, and that's really sad.
It's disheartening.
It is. And to go back to your point about, like, what would it be like if I had been in a space that looked like me or have that looked like me, I know, you know, historical precedent shows that whenever black folks try to do for ourselves, it's, you know, destroyed by whiteness, by white people. You know, look at Tulsa, look at Rosewood. We can look now that HBCUs are being defunded, and they have been defunded at a consistent rate for the past 30 years. So it's more so like you clearly don't want me here. Mm-hmm. Like, your actions and, like, the institution that you've built show me that you don't want me here. And when we try to do things for ourselves, when we try to say, like, all right, you know, if you don't want me here, all right, fine, we're going to be over here.
But I'm going to go over here. I'm going to just go and do my thing.
Right. No, we can't do that either. So, like, what is our mode of recourse as black people?
Where should you be?
You know what I mean? So,
where are you? Yeah. No, I 100% feel you on that shit. If you go off, it's like in Spanish, my mom says it's like, I don't even know how to translate. It's like, palo si va y palo si no va. Like, it's good if you do it. It's bad if you do it. It's bad if you don't do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, either way you do it, it's wrong.
Yeah.
Either way that you, wherever you try to navigate or do whatever it is you want to do, you're just wrong. And you might as well put the word wrong tattooed on your fucking forehead.
Exactly.
Because whatever you do is going to be wrong. Whether you try to be with your white counterparts and do whatever, wrong. Nah, we don't want you here. Okay, I'm going to do my thing. Wrong. No, I can't be a part of that. What do you mean you're going to do your own thing? I want to be a part of that too. And that shit is where all these problems. Yeah. But, okay, this next question, I did some research last night. I watched videos, I read articles, and I was really looking forward to this question that someone submitted. It's can Latinx people say the N-word?
Mm.
So just to so people say Latinx, and it's basically referring to people that, if you've never heard that term, it's like Latino and Latina people. But it's more, how would you explain it, Josh? It's more more inclusive.
Yeah.
It's a more inclusive term, the X.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the person said, can Latinx people say the N-word? Mm-hmm. And so I did some research, and what I was thinking was, I'm going to tell you what I think.
Okay.
And then I want you to respond to that.
Okay.
So first, I think it's important to point out that in the I'm not used to saying Latinx because it's a new term. So Latino is going to slip out.
Of course.
But in the Latinx community, there are white Latinx people and there are black Latinx people in terms of race, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I consider myself Afro-Latina. So even in Dominican Republic, where I'm from, there are cases where there's racism there. So there are people, there are white Latinos who are against people that are black in our country. So even if you're just Dominican, let's not even talk about Haiti right now, but just like within the Dominican community, and even out here in the United States. So I was doing a little bit of research, and let me pull it up. One thing, so that's the first thing I wanted to say, that there's a difference between white Latinos and black Latinos, right? Mm-hmm. So I was watching this video, and this woman was saying, she said, "I don't think you can ever reclaim a word that you've never been oppressed by." Mm. Like, you cannot use that word if you've never been, if it doesn't pertain to you. Right. Do you get what I'm saying? Right. And then I continued watching the video, and she was talking about how growing up, so oftentimes, like, the black and Latino communities are shunned out together. Mm. And she even brought up hip-hop, right, and how hip-hop is something that, like, brought the black and Latino community together. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're both excluded oftentimes, that brought us together. And then in the hip-hop community, people say the N-word. People say nigga all the time. Mm-hmm. So, investors here experience slavery. You know that here you've been called a nigger. You know that here, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm, your grandparents went, you just spoke about your grandmother. You know what I'm saying? And your great-grandmother and that experience that you shared. Mm-hmm. In Dominican Republic, we have, like, I'm considered black. Like, mm-hmm, my race is black. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, like, I would never check off white. That was an issue that I had in the census and any paperwork that I used to have. I would ask my mom, like, what am I? I'm like, what do I check off? Black, white, Native American. Like, sometimes I remember even being young, checking off Native American. I'm like, I'm kind of brown. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I guess there's just so many different branches to this, and I'm wondering, because I say nigga, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, am I wrong for saying that? I know some black people don't even like to say the word nigga, and that's cool. But for the people that do say it, I'm wondering, like, is it problematic that I'm saying it? You know what I'm saying? And then I was also thinking about the woman that I was seeing in the video where she was talking about how, if you've never been oppressed by that, or, like, if you've never experienced that, you can't be using that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I feel as though in my high school experience, and even here at UMass, I experienced depression, and you know what I'm saying? Right. And, like, I am fully aware and cognizant of the fact that I have African roots. Mm-hmm. So aside from the Dominicans that don't claim their blackness and that refuse to accept the fact that they have, you know, it's basically the difference between us is that there was a stop. Yeah. In the middle, you know, mm-hmm, and a little bit of a mix. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking, if, like, the American black versus just being black in terms of your race, mm-hmm, if that ties into it, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
And, like, I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Absolutely. And, like, I had to do a lot of research and, like, you know, internal processing when the question was posed as well. I 100% agree with everything that you just said, right? And I think the question for me is, like, the diaspora is so huge. Right. The diaspora is, like, huge. And because of a number of different factors, like, black in, like, at least a global context oftentimes gets black is synonymous with American. So therefore, like, the black American experience oftentimes, like, serves as the archetype for, like, well, the black Americans are experiencing this, and almost times you all are supposed to experience this too. It's like, well, that's not the case either. Like, mm-hmm, there's so many different experiences in the African diaspora. So therefore, like, the black American experience doesn't trump anything. It's a part of that diaspora, but it doesn't set the standard for how other black folks are supposed to live throughout the globe. Mm-hmm. And I was having a conversation with my dad about this, to your point about, you know, the difference between, you know, diasporic black and American black, for lack of better terms. And, you know,
Wait, can you say that one more time? You said, but the difference between being black
from, being, like, black in the diaspora.
Yep, and then being American black.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. For lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that, well, well, actually, it was actually my uncle, excuse me. And he was saying that, you know, I can't stop anybody from using the word. I can't stop non-Black Americans from using the word. But I just hope you realize that this is something that is very particular to the Black American experience. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't been called a nigger, and you haven't seen phrases like "nigger go home" and like that's that in his mind, like that then sets the standard for who can say it.
Right.
And
I want you to speak from the heart. Like, don't worry about like going against what I said. You know what saying?
Absolutely.
Like, say what you want to say. Yeah. I don't. This is an open. Mm. Judgment free. We can disagree. Mm. Say what you want to say for sure.
Absolutely. I just want to be intentional about my language. Language is so important. I just want to make sure that I'm saying everything
in the most
clear and pointing way. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I do agree with him. It's like I understand that. And I really understood that, and I thought that was the truth. Mm-hmm. Then I got older and. I, you know, have friends from New York. You know, we're from New York. You know, you have Dominican folks. You know, you have, you know, Black American folks from the South. You have, mm-hmm. you know, Haitian folks. You have Jamaican folks. And, you know, there is such, and especially through hip-hop, there's such a dialogue going on between all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And to where they're really, like, who, then the question is, like, well, who gets to set that line? Who gets to set that standard? And then, like you said about the exclusion, that was the thing that really made me shift, because my boy, his name is Josh too. He's from Cuba, but mm-hmm. he's as dark as I am. You know, for those of y'all who don't know, you can't see I'm dark skin. So he's as dark as me. We got stopped by the cops one day. And they called us, you know, yo niggas, get down and sit down on the curb. Mm-mm. And I'm like, okay, so you know, he understood that he was Black. He understood his Blackness, but you know, at that point in time, like, there was a moment of racialization. It's like, no, like, I'm a nigga in the United States, and I am treated as such by the state. So, oh, man.
I feel what you're saying 100%. You
know, and I think to me, it, so for me, and again, like, just as you said, I do not then claim to speak for, you know, Black folk.
You're speaking for Josh.
Right, I'm speaking for Josh. Mm-hmm. I personally believe that, like you said before, I don't believe white people should use the swear nigger. I don't think white Latinx folks should use the term nigger. I think that Black folk can use the term nigger. And I also think that we also need to...
Wait, when you say Black folk...
I mean, like...
You talking about... remember, Black folk. Yeah, I'm talking... So diasporic, not necessarily like American Black.
Right. I think diasporic... I think Black folk right. can use the term nigger. Also, I also think that there needs to be a conversation about anti-Blackness in the Latinx community. So mm-hmm. I've heard some of my boys who are Dominican say, like, they've said nigga, and then turn around and say, well, I'm not Black, I'm X. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't do that. Right, you can't have it both ways in that situation, right? And also, there also needs to be a conversation of, you know, just as there are times in which the Black American experience serves as the standard for the entire diaspora, there oftentimes, I've also seen times where Black Americans are treated as, like, you know, like the quote-unquote stepchildren of the diaspora. Like, you aren't authentically Black because you can't trace your, you know, ancestry to X and Y and Z. Like, well, and by Black folk, by other diaspora Black folk. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, no, we got to talk about enslavement. We got to talk about erasure. We got to talk about colonialism and violence that interrupted my history.
Right.
And I'm not saying that you should then, I'm not saying by you being in the United States from Nigeria or whatever, I'm not saying that then totally erases. And I think that that needs to be central to your history as well, but also recognize that I have a history that's interrupted as well. Mm-hmm. You know? But like you said, like, this is like, we can do a whole show on this right now.
Facts.
It's just like, I think anti-Blackness is one of the, I think anti-Blackness for me is the key thing in this conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I can't stop anybody from the diaspora from using the word. Mm-hmm. However, if you want to continue to perpetuate anti-Blackness while still choosing to use the term nigga, then we have a problem. And I have no problem addressing that with you and how that hypocrisy is then so glaring.
Right, right. And I'm trying to think of the right words. I agree with you. And I think it's really interesting when you mention like the anti-blackness in the Latinx community, because it's alive and it's I've experienced it even in my own family. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, it's very interesting to see that my family in Dominican Republic, my family that's lighter skin, more fair skin, they have more money. They, you know, they don't really have friends that are darker skin.
Mm.
And then when I see my family that is, you know, your skin tone, they live in the middle of nowhere. Mm. They don't have anyone that's, you know, fair skin. Right. As there's a really strong racial divide in the Dominican Republic and in a lot of Latinx, you know, countries or communities. And it's definitely a conversation that needs to be had. And I even tried having this conversation with one of my cousins. I went to DR in July, and I was telling her, you know, I studied sociology and, you know, I'm really passionate about this and that and the third. She's like, oh, wow, like sociology is not a thing now.
Mm.
And I think that's another thing. Like, we're not educated on any of this.
Mm-hmm.
We're not, you know, I told you I was checking off Native American. Because my thought when I was 12 years old, I'm like, okay, and it's so ignorant and it's so stupid and I'm so ashamed at the same time. But like, my thought of a Native American is like somebody who kind of looks like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody who's like my skin tone, somebody who like has like eyes like me. And I'm thinking like, okay, I'm gonna just check this off. I vividly remember checking that shit off.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom saying, oh, you Indian. Like, in Spanish, it's called India.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, but I don't understand. And then, but as time went on and as when I came to UMass, it's kind of like when I had that realization and when I experienced like that racism in high school, that's when I was like, oh shit, it shit just got real. You know what I'm saying? And like in high school, when I experienced that, and then when I got here, do you remember when somebody wrote, kill these niggas on the door?
Yep.
When that shit popped off, that's when I like,
yeah.
That's kind of when I like acknowledge my blackness in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And somebody in one of there was something going on. It was like a rap. It wasn't a rap. It was something. But somebody called me a nigger, and that was like one of the. That has only happened to me 3 times in my life, and it was just really like a slap in the face. And it made me realize like I'm not just Dominican here. Like I'm. I don't know. It made me feel unsafe. It made me feel targeted. It made me feel... And then I'm thinking of, like, my black counterparts, like, American black. You know what I'm saying? And my friends that are darker than me.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, you must experience this 10 times more than I do. You know what I'm saying? It was... I don't know. It was just a lot.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with you. I think that if you're a white Latinx person, I don't think you should use it at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all. If you are a black Latinx person and you are aware of your blackness, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you're not a hotep, then I think that you can use it. But that's my personal opinion.
Right.
But is there anything else you want to say about that? About the Latinx community and, you know, the use of the N-word?
Well, I think we touched on it a lot.
I think we did.
You know, I think that there's never going to be a consensus among like diaspora black people about like what we should be doing with that word.
Right.
You know, I, again, like I said before, like, I can only speak for myself, and like my racialization has shown me a lot of different things, and it's shown me that, you know, the black American experience is not the only black experience.
Right.
And that is something that word is something that we have to be honest about. And like, what does that then mean for, like, you know, what does that mean for my kids? What does it mean for my grandkids? What does that mean for, you know, your grandkids? Like, how is this going to then play out? But again, I still unabashedly say, like, you know, if you're white, you should not be saying
that. Hell no. Nah, absolutely not. And I was reading some of the comments. So as I was doing some research and, like, reading these articles, I like to go down and look at the comments that people leave. Because that's when you really see who's reading this shit.
Yeah.
And, like, some of them are really woke, and some of them are fucking ignorant. 90% of them are dumb as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually copied and pasted some of the comments that people made.
Mm.
So I'm going to read some of them. Okay. So let's see. One of them that's kind of stood out to me is, like, it doesn't matter if you wear a sleeve in some other part of the world. It only applies to America. It doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter if, I guess they're trying to say, it doesn't matter if your ancestors were slaves in other parts of the world. This shit only applies in America. Australian Aboriginals are black and they don't say it. But I feel like that's Australian. I could say the same thing about Dominicans and DR. Like, somebody might say nigga because it's in a song. You know what I'm saying? In a hip hop song. But people don't say, like, what's good, my nigga? Like, it's a different, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I feel like if these Australian Aboriginals that are black came here, I feel like that experience would be different.
Right. I think that also ties into, like, what my uncle was saying. It's like, well, no, this is like a U.S. black thing.
Right.
And I'm not totally disagreeing with him on that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
Like, what if that Australian Aboriginal came to America and experienced, like, was kind of, like, in that culture? I feel like over there, they're not going to be, I don't know, they're not around people that are saying nigga, nigga, nigga. But here, if they come here, I'm wondering if that would change.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If they set foot here and lived in the communities with black folks and, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying?
Right.
American black. Interesting.
But also, I think that just goes to, like, how flimsy of a construction race is. Like, you can go to different parts of the world and, like, you know, I'm, you know, this one moment or that one moment, depending on, like, where, like, I am, like, you know, geographically.
Right. Interesting. Well, there were a lot of comments that I put down. And then people also mentioned how, like, and I think this was just kind of unspoken, but it's, I guess the way that we're talking about it in terms of, like, other people saying nigga, I'm talking about it, like, as a term of endearment or, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? I don't think that anyone should be saying, whether you're black, you acknowledge your blackness or not, you shouldn't be using the term nigger, mm-hmm. ER, and saying, like, oh, wow, you're such a, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you're this because it even makes me uncomfortable saying mm-hmm. it, you know? Like, mm-hmm. you're this because you did something that was wrong. Or
right.
Does that make sense?
No, yeah, like those hard R's. Like,
yeah.
Like,
Okay, so we have one last question for you. There's an article about your father being
mm-hmm.
a cop.
Mm-hmm.
How do you protest against police brutality considering that someone in your family is a part of the system?
Mm. Well, so to be clear, my father is a cop, but I also have uncles that work in corrections. I have cousins that are police officers. Actually, I have a cousin who passed away due to, she contracted cancer from the smoke that and the dust that came out when the Twin Towers fell. So, like, thank you. Basically, I have a long, there's a lot of cops in my family, you know,
mm-hmm.
and when you talk to, well, specifically white men, right? I spoke to white men about this, and I've been called a disgrace. I've been called an abomination, like a prodigal son, a black.
Oh
shit.
My god!
And I'm like, I heard all this shit before.
Right.
Like, you ain't
by your family or
by people that don't know my father nor anybody in my family, right?
Right.
So the first thing that I will say to that is that it doesn't protect me. Like, at all. Like, my father being a cop doesn't shield me from anti-blackness. It doesn't shield me from racism. It doesn't shield me from white violence, right? I can just as easily have been, like, on the road with you, and I get pulled over by a police officer, and, like, I can't just sit, oh, my dad's a cop. I'm okay, right? Oh, yeah, okay, have a nice day. Like, that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way anti-blackness is set up, like, all of our bodies are, you know, targeted and marked all the time. And to that question, my father is not just a cop, he's a black cop. And I'll tell you another story as well. So my father worked in Williamsburg for the better part of his career. And one day he told me the story that one day he was running for work and he just threw on his uniform. He just changed in the precinct, but the day he threw on his uniform, he just headed straight to the job. he parked a couple blocks from the precinct and he was walking to walking to work.
You said he didn't have his uniform on?
He had it on. Yeah, okay. He just changed in the precinct out of his street clothes, but today he just put his uniform on and went straight into work.
Okay.
So he had his uniform on, parked a couple blocks away from the precinct, and he just walked to work. And there was this white couple, elderly white couple, that stopped him, and they were just, like, you know, shooting the breeze, talking shit, whatever. To the point where he had to tell them, like, look, you know, this has been a great conversation, but I'm running late. I have to go.
Right.
Off, he gets off his shift. The same couple is standing there, or sitting there, I should say. He walks past. He, like, says hi. They look right past him. They don't even acknowledge his presence.
Right.
And, like, that, to me...
Did he have his uniform on when he got out?
He didn't have his uniform on. He did not have his uniform on. He had his street clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
The same person, same two people, and they totally look right past him. And that, to me, was a pivotal moment, but understanding, like, my father is a police officer. Yes, my father is an agent of the state, but he is still black. And that doesn't protect him, nor does it protect me, nor does having money or degrees or, you know, notoriety, that doesn't protect any of us from anti-blackness. And, like, that story, like, really concretized that for me.
Right. Mm. And so do you ever have people in your family, like, I guess what I'm trying to say, so your family's black, mm-hmm. obviously. Mm-hmm. And there, you mentioned that there's a couple of police officers, cops. Yes. Do they ever, you know, come to you and say, like, why are you doing this? Like, or do they also acknowledge? And I guess I don't want you to speak for your family, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? But in your experience, have mm-hmm. you had any of them kind of come up to you and question what you're doing? Or are they aware of, you know, your intentions?
Mm-hmm. To think about, I've never actually had a conversation with anybody else around, like, policing right. with anyone except my father.
Okay.
And he approaches it like, you know, I raised you to be your own person. Like, mm-hmm. you are not obliged to hold things that I hold and hold the ideas that I believe. We have had some, like, serious conversations about, like, the function of police and, like, the evolution of policing. Just showing things from his vantage point, being an officer in NYPD for 25 years, and things from my vantage point as somebody who is, you know, in the movement for Black Lives, who has, you know, been to Ferguson and things of that nature. You know, right. a lot of the things that we agree on, things that we don't. There are things that we have, like, very, you know, heated debates on. But he's never told me, like, I can't approve of you doing this. I can't believe that you're doing this, X, right. Y, and Z, this, that, and the third.
Okay. So interesting. That was a really good question. It seems like it was somebody who, like, maybe have no, you know what I mean? Like, know you mm-hmm. or, and let's see. Let's look at my for time. Okay. So we can make this one short. So when did you realize that you were woke, or were you always woke? I feel like, personally, I already told y'all, I was not woke at all mm-hmm. until, like, high school, when I realized that I was being, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. that shit was happening to me. Yeah. And I feel like I didn't really become, quote unquote, woke until I got to UMass, and that whole shit happened. Yeah. And there were a lot of protests and, you know, rallies and town hall meetings and stuff like that. And I became really active in that community. And, like, that's kind of when my shift was, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I owe that to the black communities that are here at UMass, you know, mm-hmm. like, to the Black Student Union and even my sorority, like, Sigma Alpha Gamma, and even, like, Student Bridges. Like, I feel like all of that, I'm really glad that UMass has that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That has those, like, black communities.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I know that, you know, you have moments of, like, you understand your blackness, you understand that you're black and everybody else is white. But it really wasn't, it didn't really click for me until also my senior year. It really clicked after Trayvon Martin was killed. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the thing that really, like, I need to then have a serious conversation with my parents about, like, blackness and
right.
anti-blackness.
Your life.
And my life, exactly. And I, you know, to be honest, I know this may sound like I don't know how this may sound, but I just can't stand the word woke. I just can't stand the word woke anymore. You know? Mm-hmm. It's just been so, it's been co-opted so many times. It's been like used by people to then justify their unwillingness to go deeper into themselves, like develop a gender analysis, a queer analysis. There are moments in which we become more aware of certain things. Like, you know, I definitely did not have the gender analysis that I have now that I did when I was like 17, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a process, you know, it's always a process. Like, you know, the day that you think you know everything is the day that's the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like in life, you should always have a growth mindset.
Absolutely.
And you know what? I learned that shit at my job about like having a growth mindset versus a fixed one. And I preach it all the time now. Yeah. Even in, I was in a relationship where I told the guy, I'm like, it seems like you have a fixed mindset with certain things. And I'm going to need you to just kind of shift that a little bit. You need to work on that.
It's real.
Because regardless, even if you consider yourself quote unquote woke, you're never going to know it at all.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's always room for more knowledge and for more understanding, and like things are going to shift in our culture. Mm-hmm. Like for a while, you know, being queer, being transgender, being bisexual, like that wasn't accepted. Now it is. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's more accepted. It's not 100%.
Right.
But I'm wondering what's it going to be in 10, 20 years from now?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a consistent shift in our culture that we need to just always have that kind of mindset of like, okay, I need to learn more. What is this about? What do you mean? Like, tell me more about this. Mm-hmm. Do your research.
Absolutely.
Man, I'm really glad we had this talk.
Oh, this is great. I love it. This is awesome.
Yo, everybody check out Josh. Check out Free Negro University. Make sure y'all get your shirts. The shirts say fuck Trump. The shirts say Free Negro. The shirts say whiteness is exhausting. Get yourself a shirt. I got my shirt. I can't wait to take a picture with it. Thank you, Josh. I really appreciate this you. Awesome. For real.
You know, you guys fucked up, so they let two of us in the same place at the same time.
Oh, shit.
They gave us two microphones and an audio. Come on. This is awesome.
It was. Thank you so much. And make sure y'all follow him on Instagram and Twitter. We're gonna get you your following on Twitter, Josh.
Okay.
We're gonna do this, okay?
All right.
Let's work on this. Black Twitter, Dominican Twitter, everybody, let's go back up Josh.
Let's do this.
What is it again?
Free Negro U, just on Twitter.
On Twitter. Yeah, everything else, Free Negro University.
Yep.
Bet.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Make sure that if you have anything to say about this episode, if you want to agree, disagree, anything at all, use the hashtag AngeCode. I want to see it. At me, use the hashtag. Josh is going to see it. We can talk about it more offline. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. I really hope that, you know, people got something out of this. You know what I mean? I feel like there was a lot that we spoke about, and this was a different episode. You know, it wasn't as ratchet. It wasn't,
no. Hey, look.
It wasn't, you know, all laughs and sunshine, mm-hmm, and, you know, jokes and shit. This was some real shit, and I really appreciate
that's
you.
That's real. But you need the ratchet, you know, like, yo, if the revolution ain't ratchet, they ain't revolution. You know?
Ratchetivity.
That's ratchetivity, yo.
Hey.
That's real. This is awesome.
Thank you so much. Make sure you follow me on Instagram and Twitter. It's AngeCode_. And another thing, make sure y'all subscribing. Make sure you click subscribe. Whether you listen on SoundCloud, click that follow button. If you're listening on the Apple Podcast app, click subscribe. Give me a rating. And, that's it. That's AngeCode. It's a wrap.
That's it.